Welcome to another World Cafe Words and Music podcast from WXPN and NPR Music. I'm David Dye. We welcome John Mellencamp to the show today. He has a new album, No Better Than This. It's his second in collaboration with producer T-Bone Burnett, and recorded in a number of historically important studios and locations around the country on vintage equipment and in mono around one microphone. John Mellencamp put out his debut in 1976. He had a string of hits in the 80s, including Hurt So Good and Jack and Diane, and brought the experience of small-town Midwest to MTV and arena stages for years. He received a Grammy nomination in 2007 for the song Our Country. Since around 2003 and his album Trouble No More, John has worked to reinvent how he presents himself as an artist. I asked him about that.
Well, you know, it dawned on me a few years ago that if I didn't, I couldn't just go out and do play in the sheds and play the hits, and because I would become the Beach Boys. I would become, you know, nothing against the Beach Boys, but I would become an oldies act, which was never, you know, my intention. If I'm going to do that, then I might as well just quit. So I had to figure out a different way of presenting myself, and when I started working with T-Bone Burnett, he kind of said to me one day, he said, John, you had the misfortune of being a big rock star during the 80s and early 90s, and you know, that's going to be a hindrance to you now. And we started talking about it, and I started making records with T-Bone, and you know, through other conversations, this is what I've decided, you know, that I need to be doing. I need to I'm in the luxury position that I can do what I want to, and if the audience wants to follow along, they can. If they want to reject it, they can. You know, I know that some people are going there and they're going, gosh, I want to hear, you know, he didn't play Hurt So Good. Well, I'm not going to. So I'm just kind of looking at my elders and seeing what Dylan does and what Neil Young does and people that I admire, and kind of following suit from what those guys do.
Well, I definitely want to talk about how this No Better Than This was made, but I'm personally just a little bit worried that all the talk about how you did this is taken away from these songs, and there is some really, really fine writing on this. And I know you recorded it really quickly. Did you write them quickly as well?
Yeah, I wrote, I had written the song, it all started with Save Some Time to Dream. I had written that song, and I had been playing it live, and I thought, you know, this song needs to be recorded, and my schedule just doesn't allow for me to record, because I've got so many shows. So I looked at, I was out on tour with Dylan, and I looked at places that we were coming close to, and then I called up Henry, I called up T-Bone Burnett, and I said, T-Bone, let's go make a mono record, and we kind of talked it through, and then decided that, you know, we should go to these historic places if we're going to do that. And I have to laugh, T-Bone and I laughed when the record first came out, because some people, like you said, well, this is a gimmick. It never even dawned on us. You know, it never even crossed our mind that people would think that.
Well, the way you did it, you know, one microphone, everybody in the room made the whole onus on the performance, which sometimes is not what you get when you, you know, records are so layered nowadays. You hardly ever hear a real performance.
Well, that's the whole point, and I think that's the reason people are responding so positively to the songs, because you know, recording, by definition, is to be able to capture the moment. But through technology, over the last 40 years, we've been able to create a moment by what you called layering, and I call, you know, constructing a record. It's so easy. That's what people do today. They construct a record. There's no moment to capture. So the idea of let's just try to capture musicians actually playing music intrigued everybody. You know, it's like, wow, can you imagine that? We're a bunch of musicians and we're going to actually play and we're going to record it like they did, like, you know, like it was originally designed to do. And I remember when we were making the record, I looked at T-Bone after we cut a song called Easter Eve, which is like 7 minutes long, and that song was done in one take, And I looked, and we both started laughing. And I said, this song's 7 minutes. We got it in one take. What were we doing in the 80s? Why in the world were we sitting there spending hours and hours and hours on drum sounds when listen to, you know, what's happening here?
Well, you mentioned Saves from Time to Dream, which is one of the notes here say it was recorded at Sun in Memphis. Could you kind of set the scene about what that was like? Is Sun more of a museum now, or was it a working studio?
Well, we had to... They give tours there. I think you're right. You know, it's more of a place for people to go look at what occurred there. But they have stuff, but we didn't use any of their stuff. All we used is the room, because we brought in our own little one track recorder, and you know, we had our own microphone. That sounds funny. We had our own microphone. We had our own little tape machine, so we didn't really need anything else. Sam Phillips had made it pretty easy for us, and we didn't even know this till we got in there. He had already marked out years ago from experimenting around, because it's an odd-shaped room, and the ceilings are funny, and it's just odd. It's an odd room. It's really just... It could have been, it just as easily been like a candy store. It has a storefront like that. It's all glass.
Well, can you do a Belmont Mall version of Save Some Time to Dream?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Save some time to dream. Save some time for yourself. Don't let your time slip away or be stolen by somebody else. Save some time for those you love, for they'll remember what you gave. Save some time for the songs you sing and the music that you made. Could it be that this is all there is? Could it be there's nothing more at all? Save some time to dream, 'cause your dream might save us all. Save some time for sorrow, 'cause it's surely gonna come your way. Prepare yourself for failure, it'll give you strength someday. Try to keep your mind open and accept your mistakes. Save some time for living and always question your faith. Could it be that this is all there is? Could it be there's nothing more at all? Save some time to dream, 'cause your dream might save us all. Cast your eyes up to heaven. Now what does that mean to you? Try not to be too judgmental, so others will not judge you. Save some time to think, oh, before you speak your mind. Many of your friends will not understand, and to them you must be kind. Could it be that this-
this is all there is? Could it be there's nothing more at all? Save some time to dream, 'cause your dream might save us all. Your dream might save us all. Save some time to dream. Save some time for yourself.
That Save Some Time to Dream, a song I've been using as my personal philosophy the last few days, and I've been wasting a lot of time, John. It's been very good for me. So, thank you.
Well, that's good. That's a good thing.
One of the things, a couple songs I want to talk about on here. One of them is The West End, which could be about anywhere. You know, it's pretty, the changes in anywhere in this country. Is it about a specific thing? Is it about anywhere near where you live? Or?
Well, actually, I'm going to point both barrels at you right now. And the West End is the United States. We are the West. And I think that, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, that America's dream was that the rest of the world would come up to our level and would all accept democracy and all accept capitalism, and that we would somehow raise the rest of the world up to where we, the two, enjoy the lifestyle and the... And I think the intentions were good, but somehow through greed, capitalism and democracy kind of didn't really work the way that we anticipated, and the rest of the world did not embrace it. So we were kind of drugged down to their level, almost to a tribal level, almost to, not as good a life quality as, let's say, our grandparents had. The food we eat's not as good for us. There's just the atmosphere. I mean, there's just too many things to go into. Aren't up to the same quality of life that America once enjoyed. And the rest of the world wanted to be like the West End, which is us, the West. And so it's really about this country. You know, there's a line in there that says, things sure have changed here since I was a kid. Someone lined their pockets, and I don't know who that is. So, I think through greed and through corporate America and corporate farming and so many things, look what happened to Wall Street, and then, of course, I've said this numerous times, and people just don't understand it. They misquote me and take it the wrong way. But, the Internet is like the most dangerous thing invented since the atomic bomb. And people go, oh, Mellencamp's old-fashioned. Well, yeah, I'll tell you what. As soon as some guy or some country, which don't think they can't, decides to take New York, Philadelphia, Boston, and unhook the electricity, which they can do very easily from a computer, and then screw up the banking, what are we going to do with all these displaced people? They're all going to be coming to Chicago, moving out here. We're going to have, the biggest cities in America in the same situation New Orleans was in, all through a stroke of a key. And people don't think that's dangerous. I think it's terribly dangerous. But they go, well, yeah, but we could talk to our friends and, you can get music easy. And it's like, so what? The music's worse. The quality of the music that comes over the Internet is worse. I think it's the worst invention since the atomic bomb. I think it's dangerous. I think it's totally dangerous.
Believe it or not, this discussion started with talking about the song The West End. Maybe is that one you could do?
Sure, I'd be happy to play The West End.
Well, the West End now, the West End then. Went by the other day just to see my friend. His house was dark and his socks were thin. I told him, let's get out to West End. For my whole life I've lived down in the West End. Sure has changed here since I was a kid. It's worse now. Look what progress did. Some will line a fire, 'cause I don't know who that is. Well, my old man slaved down here in the West End. Thought the future was bright way back then. But it beat him down till he had nothing to give. It broke his back, took away his will to live. Well, now me, I don't think much of the West End. Ain't gonna end up like the old man did. 'Cause I got dreams and they're bigger than this. As far as I'm concerned, you can't keep the West End. Well, I guess down here in the West End, a broken promise is just now and then. It's not even fair to think that they would, 'cause the West End now ain't no damn good. Well, out there somewhere, you know, there's gotta be a place where man can live with a smile on his face. And every day something new begins. But it ain't down here at the West End. Well, someday down here in the West End, no one will remember how this whole place began.
John Mellencamp, that live performance of The West End, a song from No Better Than This. His latest album, No Better Than This, is his second collaboration with producer T-Bone Burnett, and it was recorded in a number of historically important locations around the country using one microphone. Now, considering the older recording techniques, I asked John if in his mind the characters in these new songs, which often seem like vintage folk tunes, were all contemporary or if some of them were from the past.
No. Never even dawned on me that we would go backwards. It was all, you know, the thing about my songs, I can play songs that I wrote, you know, in the early 80s, and I can play them on acoustic guitar, and they sound almost exactly the same as the songs sound on No Better Than This. It's just that, you know, back then, I had to deal with a record company, and try to be successful at radio and then MTV and all that kind of stuff. So there was a sort of a dance that we were all doing that I wasn't really even aware of that I was doing at the time. I thought I was just the way it was. But now, as an older gentleman, I understand, you know, what happened. And now I'm able to just present the songs as they are written, as opposed to, like I do, I still play Jack and Diane, but when I start to play it, people don't even know what it is, because it sounds like a country song now. It has, it's a country folk song now, and it gives those two people a whole different feeling. It's not a pop song anymore, and it's a sad song now. I didn't even realize it myself. Until I put a different arrangement on it. It was just a matter of how much decoration I wanted to hang on the songs. And my last three or four records has been a very conscious effort, thanks to T-Bone, saying, John, you don't need that stuff on there. Don't put that on. You're taking it too much into the pop world again. Get out of it. And that's where he has been very helpful to me.
I want to talk about some more of these places that you went, and I understand it kind of began in Savannah, and maybe take us into this, the church where you recorded there.
Well, it's the first black church in America, and it is, oddly enough, downtown. You know, most black churches were not allowed to be downtown, but this is a pretty good-sized church, and it was actually, there are a number of tunnels underneath the church that were starting places and dropping off places for the Underground Railroad. And you could well imagine at that time, with no air conditioning, what that subterranean life must have been like if you had to stay there for 3 or 4 days. There are diamonds cut in the wood on the bottom floor of the church where they used to pour water down to the people hiding underneath there, and they would drink the water as it came off the floor and cool themselves with it, because the heat must have been, you know, absolutely unbearable. So that kind of history was fascinating to us, not to mention Savannah is like one of my favorite towns in the world. I have a house right across the ocean from it, you know, a 17-minute boat ride, and I'm on an island, and I can see Savannah from my house. So I've always loved Savannah, and I've always enjoyed the voodoo-ish atmosphere of the place. And as it turned out, when we approached those people about recording there, they welcomed us with open arms, so much that I got baptized there. And I bet you I'm one of a handful of white people that's ever even been baptized in that church. So it was quite an experience. So anybody that thinks, you know, Mellencamp and Burnett came up with a gimmick, they're crazy. We were living it, man. We were living it.
Well, you have an interesting Super 8 film that you show before the concerts that has a little footage of you getting baptized in it, which is just kind of wonderful. It sounds like a wonderful, wonderful place. Now, the other place you worked, I know, was the Gunter Hotel in San Antonio, where Robert Johnson recorded all his work. And is the room itself, is anything special? Can anybody sleep in room 414, or is it, what's it
sure
like?
Sure you can. Yeah. And there's a little plaque, you know, in there that says that this is the room where Robert Johnson recorded. But the interesting thing is, it's exactly, physically, you know, before we went down there, we researched how Johnson set up. What corner was he in? You know, we wanted to be in the same corner. Where was the recording equipment set up? And we walked into that space, and it was exactly the same. I mean, physically, the walls were the same. There was no doubt in which corner I was supposed to be sitting in. But, of course, the hotel had been modernized. It's a Sheraton now, and it had carpet on the floor, which, you know, when Johnson was there, there was no carpet. So we brought in a hardwood floor and put in. And took all the curtains off the wall, because we were sure that they only had blinds there, because we had seen pictures. And we tried to put the room back as much as we possibly could into its original state.
Now, did what you recorded there ended up on the album?
A song called Right Behind Me. I recorded 3 songs there, and only one of them made the record. But I knew that this song, Right Behind Me, which I had written once I figured out that we were going to record there, is, of course, about the devil. And, you know, on my live show, I have a story that I tell about some people think there's no devil. And then I tell this make-believe story that I, at 14, had the devil cornered in the in an apple tree. And as long as I had him in the apple tree, no sin could occur. But he outsmarted me, because he sent a cute girl, and I left underneath the apple tree, and he escaped.
That's almost biblical. John Mellencamp is our guest, and John, what do you like to do live next?
Well, we might as well. So we've done some new songs. Let's just do an old song, you know, an old favorite. Let's just do Small Town.
Well, I was born in a small town and live in a small town. Probably died in a small town. Oh, the small communities. All my friends is a small town. My parents live in the same small town. My job's a small town. Provides a little opportunity. Educated in a small town. Taught to fear Jesus in a small town. Used to daydream in that small town. Another boy and romantic, that's me. I seen it out in this small town. Had myself a ball in this small town. My wife was 13 years old when I wrote this song. That small town is like me. No, I cannot forget from where it is that I come from. And I forget to people who love me. I can be myself here in this small town. People let me be, this is what I want to be. Got nothing against a big town. Man, I'm still hillbilly enough to say, look who's out there in the big town. My bed's in a small town. Oh, that's good enough for me. Cause I was born in a small town. And I can breathe in a small town. Gonna die in a small town. Oh, that's probably where they bury me. Cause I was born in a small town and live in a small town. Gonna die in a small town. Oh, the small community.
Small town, you know that one. That is John Mellencamp, our guest today. And you talked about the West End being a metaphor. I guess small town is really just about our small towns.
Well, it's you know, the decay of small town America is massive, and it's going to spread. It's already spreading to the downtowns of our big cities. You know, the decay of America is pretty scary, what's happened. The downtowns, as you and I knew them, no longer exist in any way, shape, or form. And I think that's what made America great, was the individuality of St. Louis as opposed to Miami. Every little town, every big town had its own personality, had its own identity.
John Mellencamp is our guest, and you've stayed in Bloomington. And, do you have a bunch of the friends you had in high school?
Well, I hate to say it, but all my friends are dead. I've got like my best friend just died about six weeks ago. He was getting ready to go watch my son fight with me in San Antonio. My son's a boxer, and we were getting ready to go down to San Antonio on Monday. And his wife went to bed at 11, and this guy said, "Well, I'm going to pack and I'll come to bed." And she woke up at 4, and she went downstairs, and he was dead on the kitchen floor. And he was, you know, getting ready to leave with me and my wife to go watch my son Hud fight in San Antonio on Monday. He died, and my other friend Tim White, who used to run Billboard, died, and the guy who was on tour with me my entire life, all of them died of massive heart attacks. Mm. So, do I have any friends here? Yeah, I got a couple friends, but you know, not you know, I would say acquaintances, people I know, people I like, but not. Not the dyed in the wool standing, right. You know, been my friend my entire life. They all died.
Well, it's interesting. This album, you really notice the songs about mortality on here. I know it's something you've written about in the past, but there's a bunch of them that come up here in the afterlife and all that. I guess that's one of your subjects. I've heard you say you have got 3 or 4.
Yeah, I got about 4 songs. I just keep rewriting them. But, you know, when you get to be a certain age, you know, these things start becoming more premier in your life because you start realizing that, hey, they're not kidding. You know, time goes by very rapidly after you reach a certain age. And it was funny that my friend that just died, I was with him a couple of days before, and he said, "You know, man, I think I can make it till I'm 85. Mm. Well, he didn't make it to 58.
Wow. John Mellencamp is our guest, and we've got time for one more tune if you'd like to do another one.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about mortality, I'll do a song called Longest Days, which is something that my grandmother said to me, who lived to be 100. One day she said... she asked me to pray with her when she was dying. She said, "God, me and Buddy are ready to come home," which is what she called me. And I said, "Wait a minute, Buddy's not ready to come home." And she looked at me and she said, "Buddy, life is short in its longest days." And so I wrote this song from those words that she spoke.
Seems like once upon a time ago, it's where I was supposed to be. My vision was true and my heart was too. There was no end to what I could dream. Walk like a hero to the setting sun. Everyone called out my name. Death to me was just a mystery, 'cause I was too busy raising up Cain. But nothing lasts forever when your best efforts don't always pay. Sometimes you get sick and you don't get better. That's when life is short, even in its longest days. So you pretend not to notice that everything has changed. The way that you look in the friends you once had, so you keep on acting the same. But deep down in your soul, you know, you got no flame. Who knows then which way to go? Life is short, even in its longest days. All I got here is a rearview mirror. Reflections of where I've been. So you tell yourself you'll be back up on top someday. But you know there's nothing waiting for you up there anyway. Nothing lasts forever, and when your best efforts don't always pay, sometimes you get sick and you don't get better. That's when life is short, even in its longest days. Life is short, even in its longest days.
Longest Days, John Mellencamp, and real treat to hear these songs done live. John, thanks a lot for taking some time talking with us today.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
John Mellencamp, our guest here on the World Cafe. World Cafe Words and Music from WXPN and NPR Music is produced at WXPN in Philadelphia at xpn.org. Thank you for spending your time here with the World Cafe.